This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, a small for sale sign signifies the death of a dream. Or does it? Let's find out inside the Compass. With its porous gray wood shingle roof and sagging porch, the small turn of the 19th century bungalow on the edge of the uptown commercial district on Lord Street has long had a defeated aura to it, an aspect that was only punctuated by the recent addition of a for sale sign out front. For me, the sign, when I noticed it, was particularly poignant, for I was present when the Key City Public Theater purchased the old house back in 2006 with exuberant dreams of replacing it with a state-of-the-art theater in which to showcase the increasingly sophisticated dramatic productions the 50-year-old community theater group was mounting under the direction of its talented new artistic director, Denise Winter, its first paid staff member. Winter is now in her 10th year at the head of Key City Public Theater, and I arranged to meet with her in the old house, which also has been serving as the nonprofit community theater group's offices, classroom, and rehearsal space for most of her tenure, to ask her what had become of that dream.
We bought this building 10 years ago at this point. I mean, you know, almost 10 years ago. We bought it in the summer of 2006. The market was zooming, stuff was selling. The theater had been looking for a new home for quite some time. The Playhouse has been occupied by what was then Key City Players, now Key City Public Theater, since 1991. And so I was hired in 2005 in May, and there were already, you know, discussions happening about purchasing a property before I became artistic director.
So it was a vision that you were actually presented with when you came
here. Yes, I was asked to be sort of, I mean, the main reason I was hired was to do, you know, the sort of traditional artistic director things, select the season, supervise directors, get directors for shows, you know, and I don't think that the board at that time could even fully envision the scope of what that artistic director role might become. And really, my role, my official title now is executive artistic director, because I do executive director work and I do artistic director work, which sometimes are two different hats in a larger organization. And an organization of this size, it's totally normal for those to be worn by the same person.
How many actually paid employees are there?
We have, including myself, two full-time employees, and then another three part-time employees. And then we have a number of independent contractors that are considered on staff, like our web designer, graphic designer, our bookkeeper, you know, those sorts of things. So it's a total of, I think, including the apprentices, 18 that are, you know, paid in on some level. Everyone is paid super modestly. but when I came on, there were no paid employees at that time, but there was a vision.
Aside from yourself.
Well, right. I became the first paid employee. But there was an idea that the playhouse that we were in was inadequate, and that the search was on, and that the search was becoming more urgent because properties were selling, and the requirements for a property to build a theater are pretty specific. You know, you have to be able to accommodate an audience of a certain size. The idea was to get to somewhere between, I mean, at that time, I think early thoughts were 100 seats. Then it sort of morphed to more like maybe 150, 160, somewhere in that zone. And so that requires a space big enough with enough what we call clear span space, which means there are no support beams in the middle, right? It's freestanding supported space.
Which this little house definitely is not.
This little house certainly does not have that, but this property had enough space for that. So Ian Keith, who was our board president at the time, as a knowledgeable builder, had looked at many spaces. And in fact, I had been involved in a before I was ever artistic director. It was actually how I even knew Ian or knew about the theater. I was involved with my partner, Albert Mendez, in a group that was looking at building a performing arts center in Port Townsend. And, you know, separate from whatever Key City was trying to achieve.
Oh, really? So you were already resident in Port Townsend. I had the impression that you had come here from elsewhere. But
I did come here from elsewhere. I moved here in 2000. And so we became aware of this discussion about a performing arts center, and we, you know, volunteered to participate in those conversations because between the two of us, we've performed in just about every major performing arts center in the United States. And so we know a lot about those kinds of buildings and, you know.
So really, you were kind of hired to be a visionary about the space as well as about, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. Like certainly the idea was that I would be that face out front, you know, promoting the project and making it happen and having knowledge about what would be needed within that space. And so when this property went up for sale, at that point, pretty much any potential property had been vetted and the feeling was this was it and we better do it. And so we bought the property with the hope that we would very quickly fundraise and pay off the building itself, which was purchased for $500,000, and move into the remainder of the campaign to actually build the property. We were aware of which still exists, the Washington State biennial grants for building for the arts. And so the thought was, you know, that was a grant that we would go for. We hired an architect with some of the funds that we raised initially. And we did plans, which are actually sitting there on the floor behind you. And you can see the date on those is July of 2007. When we bought the property, we had a big party here. And we, you know, put out a box and began raising money. And we had this one whole wall was called the Dream Wall. And we asked people to just put things up, like, what would you like to see in the new theater? And, you know, it was everything from comfortable seats to a trap room or a fly space or, you know, specific technical things for a theater, a concession stand, you know, like it was just anything that they thought, you know, at that time we were in the 46 seat theater, right? Not even where we are now. I mean, where we are now, but not as
but
expanded.
You got additional space.
Right. Yeah. We got additional space in 2008 when the property next door became available. We felt like we had some momentum. We were trying to grow our base. We definitely needed more seats than 46. And so we expanded to 66 seats with an adequate lobby to actually have a concession stand and restrooms that weren't in the theater itself. And we got an additional dressing room out of the deal and more storage space and immediately began filling it. I mean, we were filling the 46-seat theater by the end of my second year. And, you know, we were very cramped all through 2007. And by 2008, we needed those seats. So when we opened our season in 2008, we had those additional seats.
Well, it sounds like everything was sort of like going swimmingly.
Well,
until...
Well, things were going swimmingly, except that we weren't actually raising money for the capital campaign in any significant way. I should say that we had one very generous, large gift that was an estate gift that was a little over $300,000. And most of that money got applied to what was a friendly mortgage, interest-only payments that started out at 3% for the first year, went to 5% in the second year. Outside of that estate gift...
That was from Ian Keith.
Yes,
he actually loaned that money.
Yeah, he loaned that money. He was the board president at the time. And so outside of that, the total amount raised on this capital campaign, which has sort of been on again, off again, $60,000 is outside of that estate gift is what we raised.
And the goal was, I mean, how much does it cost to build this building?
That, the estimate at the time in 2007 was $6 million.
$6 million.
Yeah. It's expensive to build a theater. Now, there were some theories that a different, smaller theater could be built for less money. And if we had put that project forward, then the money would have been raised. I don't think that the money would have been raised for a $1 million building or a $6 million building. I don't think it was the price tag that was the issue. I think that We did not, we had very little, an extremely modest donor base at that time. There was no history of fundraising in the organization. You know, occasionally someone would write a check because they liked the theater and they wanted to give us a little bit of money. When I arrived at Key City, there had been three gifts of more than $500 in its history that we could track or knew about.
So feelers had not gone out before the property was bought to see if there were any sort of deep-pocketed donors that might, like, come forward. I mean, it seems kind of astonishing to me that yes, you know, this big step was taken on faith that those people would, like, materialize later.
Not that I'm aware of. However, the feeling that I got, and again, I had only been there for a year, and I was gone for 4 months of my first year because that was the original arrangement I had. I was still working for Radio City at the time, so I would go at Christmas. The feeling was that I got from, and maybe I misunderstood, that I got from the board president was he felt confident putting the money forward for the loan because he had confidence that those folks were out there. That was sort of how he presented it to the board, to me, because I did raise my hand and say, where are we, you know, how will we do this capital campaign? And we had great people on our capital campaign committee. We attracted some really wonderful community-minded people to be on that committee with fundraising history. We had Michelle Sandoval, we had Cindy Finney, we had John Kleiss, we had Michael Cavett. I'm probably forgetting really important people because it's a long time ago, you know, plus our board, you know. So we had people in the community who did say, you know, and a lot of them were people who had been on that sort of performing arts committee that wanted to see that happen. And we were getting some, you know, good thoughts and advice from them. But we didn't have a donor base. I mean, you usually don't start a capital campaign with an organization unless you have some form of donor base or some connection to a donor base. And it just didn't materialize. I think people didn't know a lot about Key City at that time. I mean, there was, you know, when I was hired, our budgets were, you know, $25,000 a year, and we served 3,000 people. We now serve over 15,000 people a year. And, you know, our budget is in, you know, close to 300,000. So that's a much different organization. And, you know, the thing we also couldn't anticipate was that, you know, we went into a pretty serious recession.
Right.
Then shortly after,
I was going to say, so,
yeah, you know, so people became conservative and, you know, not interested in probably risk taking. And so, you know, the timing, you know, buy at the height of the market.
Well, I mean, like, theater is never really a big sort of money maker unless you're on Broadway. You know, and you have
there are two different types of theater. There's nonprofit theater, which our purpose is not to you know, make money. Our purpose is to serve the community in the most affordable way possible. That's sort of the definition of a nonprofit. We have to keep it accessible. You know, if we charge the actual ticket price that would cover all of our expenses to do it, it would not be attainable by most people in our community. You know, on a regular basis, come see five shows a year at that price. Commercial theater is designed as a for-profit business, and they put huge amounts of investment in with an expectation of return. It's also extremely high risk, and a lot of money gets lost on Broadway. You only hear about the shows that succeeded. You don't necessarily hear about the shows that, you know, millions of dollars went into. They opened, they ran for, you know, a week and closed. And so there's a risk-reward factor in commercial theater that's much scarier than most commercial businesses. But, you know, not nonprofit theater, it's a different animal, and it's what most theater is in America.
So give me a rough, like, financial picture. I mean, 66 tickets each show, that's not really covering expenses, is
it? No. We're pretty much in the ballpark of your normal nonprofit theater scenario, which is approximately 50% of our overall expenses are covered by ticket sales. And the other 50% has to be made up by, you know, generous donations from the community, which are...
The famous
little white envelope. And, you know, sponsorships, advertising, other forms of earned revenue that we create. So, and again, we had no other forms of earned revenue when I started at the theater. We had a few people who bought ads in the programs. I had a volunteer, Diane Diamond, who took that on a couple years into my tenure here. When she took it over, we had $1,500 in advertising sales. We had boosted it up a little bit, right? And by the time she left, it was too big of a job anymore for a volunteer. We had $15,000 in advertising sales a year.
Annually.
And that is higher now. And that is now supplemented by approximately $30,000 in sponsorships. And again, that was a concept that I brought to the table. In fact, First Federal was our very first sponsor of anything. They sponsored one of our education programs for $750. Chris Nelson, who very visionary person in this town, who really got sponsorship, jumped in as a show sponsor years ago, and then became our very first season sponsor, which is a much higher dollar marketing investment. But they get a lot of return in terms of the marketing exposure that they get through being a part of the theater in that way. So, you know, I was all about, when I was hired, I said I would do two things. I would put butts in seats and I would put, you know, dollars in the coffer. And so there, you know, I had to be creative about ways to do that. You know, I introduced season tickets and, you know, we have a large subscriber base now. And so lots of those things. With the expansion, we were able to do concessions, and the concessions proceeds cover the scholarships that we give out, and, you know, and also helps to fund our ability to have a box office person, you know, down there serving our patrons. So
what's a typical scholarship?
We've given scholarships, you know, when we first started out, they would be like $250, $500. But now we mostly give $500 or $1,000. This year we were able to give a $2,000 scholarship. So, you know.
These are scholarships for?
The sort of external scholarships are what we give to graduating high school students or current college students, to further their education. But we also have a lot of internal.
Is this specifically for students who want to study theater?
Yes, exactly. Sorry. Thank you for clarifying that. So we've done those for years. And then also internally, we give a lot of scholarships to kids who want to take our classes, our theater programs that we have, our summer camps, Teen Lab, Theater Adventure Club, which is year round. These are things that anybody from, we have classes for 4-year-olds on up through, you know, teens. And so there are a lot of internal scholarships. 60% of the kids who take classes here get some form, whether partial or full, scholarship to take those classes.
Now, are you running those classes in this building or over at the theater?
Well, that was actually one of the cool things about this building is it gave us an education space. We ran a lot of those classes out of here. We usually try to configure it so that they do a lot of it here, but then they get an opportunity to get on the stage and perform sort of their final piece that they've been working on. Summer camps are usually mostly down there. It just depends on what's running in the playhouse at the time and how much we can accommodate down there. But I'd say the majority of class time has been spent up here in this building.
So it seems like it's going to present a real problem to the organization when and if this building sells, because you have your offices in here, you've been running classes in here. So
we have a guest artist apartment.
Exactly. So you must be like thinking hard about what happens next.
Yes, it will be a challenge, and it's a challenge that we're prepared to face. We have to move forward. We have to first and foremost serve our mission. Our mission is not to maintain a house on Lawrence Street. Our mission is to entertain, educate, and inspire our community with live theater. And we're doing that. you know, our individual donors, people who support the theater, are being quite generous. I mean, we've grown our donor base every year. We've grown our audience. So we have to live that mission. And that's the most important thing. That's what this board is focused on, is creating a sustainable organization. And we know in our 5-year strategic plan, which runs through 2017, the goal is to, by 2017, be serving 25,000 people annually. Well, we're not going to be able to do that in a 66-seat theater. We're going to have to do that in a variety of ways, whether that means being in the schools and serving, you know, more students. That will raise the number of people who are served by the organization, whether that means touring out to other places or whether that means getting a larger facility. You know, there are many ways to do that, but we're focused on that. And what we have found is that we're sort of living this past idea about this building with there was no plan when this was purchased to maintain it. There was no will to maintain it because the thought was it was going to be moved off this property. It's a historic property.
And you're telling me there's no budget to maintain it.
And there's no budget to maintain it because there was no plan to maintain it. In fact, the first years that we were in here, you know, it was we barely did anything because it was always, well, we're not going to be here very long, you know. And then the challenge was also we also have a playhouse, right? And how much do we put into that? Do we put air conditioning in there? You know, listeners, I know you will tell me, yes, please put air conditioning in there. You know, do we upgrade things in the playhouse? We did the expansion. We had to, right?
What's the deal with the playhouse?
The playhouse is a rental.
It's a rental, right. So, I mean, how long a lease do you have on that?
Currently, it's... It's just kind of vague, to be honest. The owner really, really likes us. He likes us being in there. And the 2-year lease ran up, and now it's like a 1-year lease. But it's pretty open. But he's been – I talk to him probably once a month, and he's very friendly and very happy to have us in there. And
So not a threat immediately.
Well, I mean, it is in that, yeah, it's a rental. I mean, he could change his mind any day. I mean, you know, there's no long-term lease. I mean, that's true. But I don't feel terribly threatened by it at this time. But then again, things change. People's ideas change. But right now, everything is good down there.
But what kind of contingency plans are you making? Say somebody comes and says, all right, I'll buy this place and I want to close in 2 weeks.
We have been going around town and looking for possibilities of space that we would move into for the offices. We might have to give up, you know, having a guest artist apartment. We might have to rethink, you know, where we do our education programs. So, you know, there are a lot of thoughts on the table, and there's a lot of groundwork being done about, you know, where we might move. Commercial property isn't exactly moving quickly right now. So, you know, this could be for sale for years. We are open to really anything. We're up against it, and this building isn't making sense to us anymore. And there, you know, it's a drain on our resources. You know, I've had 3 boards now who have said, please sell this property. I resisted that notion until we had at least launched a campaign to try to get rid of the mortgage burden part of it. We owe $197,000 on the building. If somebody wants us to keep it, come, please write that check. You know, if people out there listening are really want to see a theater in this community, it's going to take money. There's no way to avoid that. And we have grants we can go for and things we can reach out, but they're all going to look at what's the base support within the community first.
So you mentioned some sort of state grant.
Yeah, building for the arts grant. I mean, one of the things they want to see is, you know, a percentage of the project cost that they want to see is already pledged within the community. And so that they know, it's like you said, did you go out and ask before you bought the property if anybody actually wanted it? It's kind of like that. They want to see that the community supports it. But that's like anything. I mean, we get grants from Arts WAF project grants, and we've gotten NEA funding, and we get that because we can show that we have a local support base. When I first started, we couldn't apply for grants because we couldn't answer most of the questions. But now we are getting grants. You know, they're small, and we're working towards larger grants all the time. First we had to show that people within the community are supporting and that we're doing good work and that we're serving folks. And now that we have those kinds of numbers, we can have more success. But that's what it's going to take on a capital campaign. I guess I would say I would encourage people that if they're excited about this notion and they want to see this happen, and believe me, I think this town deserves a nice, comfortable theater. We don't have it, and just about every neighboring community does. Come by the office and look at the plans and, you know, make yourself heard.
At this point, Winter walked me through the architect's drawings of the Dream Theater that had been drawn up, with its 2.5-story fly space for rapid set changes, its lighting catwalks, its large rehearsal room that could double as a second performance space, its spacious lobby, storage rooms, dressing rooms, and offices. And I could see that, as far as Winter was concerned, the Dream wasn't really dead, but just reluctantly placed into a sort of suspension, ready for display should any serious supporter come to the fore.
We'll continue to operate in the space we're in. We'll keep doing what we can do as long as we can make it financially sustainable. But, you know, 66 seats, do the math. It's not really that financially sustainable. And, I would say there are probably very few people who come to our playhouse and don't think that a better, nicer, larger facility would benefit the community. But it's a matter of how do you then activate that? How do you make that a reality, not just a vision or an idea or a dream? Right now, we operate out of 8 facilities. We have the office, we have a storage facility, we have the playhouse, we have the shop spaces that we use at people's individual homes, we use the Pope Marine, we perform at Northwind Arts, a regular year-round program, we have dinner theater at Alchemy, we have the park, Chetsumoka Park. That is a drain on the organization, to be that spread out over that many facilities.
We discussed other considerably less expensive options KCPT is considering, including shifting productions to the Uptown Community Center or Fort Worden's Wheeler Theater, or just modifying the current performance space.
You know, not being comfortable is not sustainable. Temperatures are rising every summer. It's warmer. And I know that we're losing audience on those hot summer nights who know that the theater is hot. So at some point, we got to do something, right? I mean, I could use a $15,000 donation today, and I would have air conditioning and heating that would be safe, that would be reasonable. I have the contractor. We've looked at it. We know what we need. We know how we would do it. They understand all the needs of putting that in a theater, which is very challenging. We could make that space cooler if I had $10,000. To buy and supplement the lighting that we have with some LED lighting and dramatically reduce the amount of heat that's generated in the space in order to light the shows.
And improve your carbon footprint.
It would improve our carbon footprint. It would be more energy efficient. And if I did that in tandem with the air conditioning, we wouldn't have to run the air conditioning as hard. So that's a $10,000 check. Done. We are ready. We have the instruments identified. We would do it. So, you know, there are things we can do, and maybe we're not being vocal enough about what those things are and that there are solutions because we are a theater that traditionally doesn't receive gifts of that size. They're unusual. And so perhaps we've been a little too shy about saying, this is what we need. It's totally doable. And it's $10,000. Let's get it done. Right?
You don't sound shy to me today.
Well, because I've decided to not be shy about it anymore.
This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.